But what if I don't understand the chapter? Do we still have to do an episode on it? I'm Lance Leffler, and this is what we're getting into today on God Meets the Grind. For most honest people, Mark 13 is completely baffling. So I'd like to think that if you're totally confused by the end of this episode, it's more Mark's fault than mine. In all seriousness, I've never been much for prophecy, end times, and divining the details of the future. But we're flying over the whole book of Mark, so we have to face the notorious chapter 13. If you were with me last time, you know that in chapter 12, Jesus did battle with all the major powers in Jerusalem. His cleansing of the temple was more a sign of God's rejection of Israel and coming judgment. In chapter 13, we find Jesus and his disciples walking out into the courtyard, and one of the disciples looks back and says, "What wonderful stones and what wonderful buildings!" The temple must have been absolutely dazzling, built with massive bright white limestones encrusted with gold plates that, according to the Jewish historian Flavius Josephus, would radiate a fiery splendor in the sunshine. But Jesus turns and says ominously, "You see these stones? Not one will be left upon another." And then he leads the disciples down into the Kidron Valley and up the slope of the Mount of Olives, where they sit down and overlook the whole Temple Mount. And the disciples, no doubt disturbed by his statement, I mean, the temple was the center of Jewish life after all, ask Jesus, "When will this happen? And what'll be the sign that it's going to happen?" In response, Jesus tells his disciples to be careful that no one leads them astray. Many will come in his name claiming to be Jesus, and they'll hear of wars and rumors of wars. There'll be earthquakes and famines. All these things are what Jesus calls the beginning of the birth pains. So he tells them that they'll bear witness to the gospel before kings and councils, that they'll be persecuted for their faith, even by family members. In some, they'll be hated by all for being Christians. Side note, it's hard for us Western Christians to wrap our minds around this. Christianity has held sway in our cultures for so long, but I think we're going to see that change pretty quickly. Then Jesus brings up this person who he refers to as the Abomination of Desolation, which sounds like a character from Transformers, but is way worse. When he appears, they're supposed to flee Jerusalem. Let's break down this title, the Abomination of Desolation, or the Abomination that Makes Desolate. Abomination means bad, really bad, like repulsive. And desolation just means that he empties the place out, people flee. And that's just what Jesus tells them to do when they see this Abomination of Desolation. Run, get out of Jerusalem, because tribulation and suffering is coming, and it's coming bad. So bad that if the Lord had not cut those days short, no human being would survive. This is an example of Hebrew hyperbole, by the way. Yes, that was a thing. It was a literary device. They would speak in exaggeration, hyperbole, to make you see the gravity of the situation. This was before they had exclamation points. Then Jesus circles back to the warning that there'll be false Christs and false prophets, and don't believe them, because I'm telling you ahead of time, they're coming. Okay, that's the first 23 verses of Mark 13. You might be asking, what's it all about? And how does it help me face the grind today? I think the focus here is the calamitous events of AD 70. I know you don't like history and dates, but that's a really, really important date to know for understanding Mark and sort of the New Testament story as a whole. And while we're at it, the speech Jesus is giving here is called the Olivet Discourse, because he gives it on the Mount of Olives. Now we've got dates and terminology. Any complaints? And I'll assign quadratic equations for homework. See how nice Olivet Discourse and AD 70 sound now? So, in AD 66, I know, another date, but just go with me here. Israel revolted against Rome, setting off what is known as the Jewish War, which came to a horrifying end in the summer of AD 70, when the Roman general Titus and 60,000 of his men besieged Jerusalem and destroyed the temple and burned it and the city to the ground. Thousands of Jews were killed. I think this is what Jesus is predicting. But what about that abomination of desolation? By the way, Mark gets this term from the Old Testament prophet Daniel. Daniel, who wrote about 600 years before, mentions such a character in several places, but probably the most relevant is Daniel 9:27. Jesus said that when they see the abomination of desolation standing where he shouldn't be, and Daniel makes it clear this is the temple, then they need to flee Jerusalem. But who was the abomination? I don't know. It might have been Titus. He entered the Holy of Holies in the temple before destroying it. That was the place only the Jewish priests could enter. So he profaned the temple, like Daniel 11:31 predicted. There were others who profaned the temple in the first century, but what Jesus is talking about has to take place when the temple is about to be destroyed, and that sort of points to Titus, but it's just a guess. Hey, let's dive into the richly complex textures of this a little more, shall we? What else were you doing today? Some people argue that the abomination of desolation in AD 70 was just a foreshadowing of the real abomination, the Antichrist, who will appear at the end of this age. Did I say richly complex? I meant painfully complicated. They also argue that everything we just covered related to AD 70 also applies to the end of the age. Honestly, I don't know. And I hate not knowing. That's why I spent a ton of hours researching this. But here's where we find ourselves. Okay, so we did the first section, verses 1 through 23. Now on to the next section, which is tiny, just four verses. Here, Jesus says, "But in those days, after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. Then he will send his angels out to gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven." So because of all the references to the sun and moon being darkened, stars falling from the sky, etc., most people take this section to be referring to a still future event, not AD 70. Although keep in mind, this is probably Hebrew hyperbole again here. If you didn't know, Jesus promised to return at the end of this age and take his followers to himself, to be with him forever. That seems to be what he's talking about here. There's some comfort, wouldn't you say? Right in the middle of this major upheaval at the end of the world is Jesus' promise that, for those who are his and are still alive at that time, he's coming to fetch you. Verses 28 through 31 start a new section. Here, Jesus draws an analogy from the fig tree. When it starts to leaf, is that a verb, to leaf? You know that summer is near. So when you see these things happening, you know that he is near, or it is near. It could be translated either way. Then Jesus makes a statement that's been hotly debated for 2,000 years. This generation will not pass away until all these things are fulfilled. Which generation? Our generation? Or his generation? Or what? I sort of favor the view that Jesus is talking about his generation, and that he's back to talking about AD 70. Every other time he says this generation in the book of Mark, he's talking about his contemporaries. So all these things he predicted in the first section, wars, famines, persecutions, false Christs, when you see those things, the fig tree is starting to leaf, and you know it is near. I think the it is the destruction of Jerusalem. Oh yeah, it might be a good idea to zoom out for a minute and show you how I see this chapter structured. I see four sections. The first section is about AD 70. The second section is about the second coming. The third section, the fig tree section where we're at right now, is back to AD 70. And the last section is the second coming again. Am I happy with an outline like that? Not really, but here we are. So let's bring this home. In the final paragraph, Jesus gives us a good little warning. Well, it's not a warning, but we should take it that way. I'll explain in a minute. He says that nobody knows when the day will come. Not the angels, not even Jesus, only the Father in heaven. What day is he talking about? Here's how I know he's talking about the second coming, because Jesus just said that they'd be able to know when the destruction of the temple was near because of the signs they'd be seeing. But now he's talking about a day that's coming that nobody knows when that day will be. So that has to be the second coming. Remember how I called this a warning a second ago that nobody knows, not even Jesus? Well, when Jesus says that he doesn't know when the second coming is, then neither do we. All right, why do I bring this up? Because in my long slog down this road of life, I've heard so many guys predicting, it's always guys, by the way, guys with charts who get late night spots on public access TV and have websites with .net addresses, acting like they can read the tea leaves, and now they're going to tell us poor saps when Jesus is returning. And now we're on to the practical bit. Believe it or not, Mark chapter 13 has some practical application for us. And here it is. Be looking for his coming. Wait, Lance, didn't you just say, no, not predicting his coming, but looking for it, longing for it, if you prefer. This is an exhortation to stewardship, really. Jesus closes the chapter with this analogy of a landowner leaving his servants and returning at an unspecified time. They want to be found faithful. He uses the imagery of wakefulness. Stay awake, he says, which I think means to always be seeking his presence and to be pleasing to him. This, I think, gives us a right mindset for living this life by expecting the next life. Thanks for listening. If you like today's episode, please share it with somebody. Also, if you're on Facebook, would you go on and follow our God Meets the Grind Facebook page? For more encouragement, go to godmeetsthegrind.com.